You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100, and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the don't nearly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson with Amelia Bonner, Paul Senior and Rob Gutman after Liverpool dismissed the challenge of Leicester City yesterday by 3-0. Liverpool, the absolute business from start to finish, steamed Leicester for the third consecutive game against them. And there is something about Leicester, Rob, where I wonder if they are almost the right temperature of porridge for Liverpool. They take them very seriously. I think they do take them very seriously indeed. And then what happens is that every single time they arguably take Leicester more seriously than any other team in the country possibly takes Leicester. They treat them as equals. They give them the utmost respect and then they batter them. And that's what we saw yesterday.
That's a beautiful way of putting it, porridge. I was going to say they're pitched just right for us. It's the same thing. Because they are. They're a threat. So it forces, you know, if you're playing, I don't know, Burnley at home, there's a danger you drop your level, however motivated and mentality monstered you are. But with Leicester, you know that they're literally looking at you, top of the league. They're always there or thereabouts in the last couple of years. You have to bring your game. And yet when you do bring it, you get to realise they're not that good. That's why they're right. And also they have to do things like they have to come at us a bit because they're not, okay, they sit deep, but they also have to show some ambition. You can't be top of the league and not show some ambition unless you're Tottenham. It's a whole different conversation. But yeah, I totally agree with you. They are pitched exactly right for us. I think, you know, there was also them being top of this league. Liverpool, that was a performance put in, I know we've used this word a lot in the last week, in adversity. There needed to be not exactly a siege mentality type response, but come on. We aren't going to feel sorry for ourselves with the injuries, etc. We aren't going to feel that others are flying past us like Tottenham and Chelsea and Leicester. We're going to show who we are. And they did. And it's a salutary reminder that actually quietly Liverpool haven't had many bad results this season. I think that's what we've won, 6 out of 9 in the league. We've won 6 out of our last 7 football matches. I think I was working out since Van Dijk went out, you know, the best player in the world, Virgil van Dijk, thereabouts. We've scored, I think, 16 or 17. Goals in 6 games and conceded just 3.
May as well just sell them, Rob.
We're in rude health despite being in terrible health.
Hmm. We'll come on to terrible health in amongst the show. We'll also come on to what the manager said towards the end of, after the game, towards the end of Sunday. And we will look ahead to Atalanta, but we will focus in right now on that performance. And Amelia, they were a class apart from the outset, is the thing I'd say. It wasn't as though they would even, when the goal comes, the goal, but it's just the moment where it ticks to you going, a goal's coming. The goal comes at just the moment that sort of counter ticks, and then, you know, Liverpool were just a class apart.
Yeah, no, they absolutely were. I kept turning to my housemate Steve at several points during the game and saying, just kind of, not shocked, because obviously I know we're brilliant, but I think I was genuinely really, really nervous about yesterday going into it because of the list of injuries, but also because it's Leicester, not because they're incredible, but because our fixtures against Leicester seem to kind of define parts of the season, or they certainly did last season. Yeah. We went from kind of just about getting a win at a point where none of us dared to believe that we were actually going to win the league, and then absolutely fucking trouncing them when we all finally went, right, this is definitely happening now. And it feels like Leicester games always come at really important parts of the season, and probably, well, this is our hardest game in this kind of up-running little run of fixtures, but also it's the first one with an injury list that's longer than like the starting 11 that you've got. So it was always going to be a really nervy one. And I kind of just kept looking at him for reassurance to be like, we're actually doing really brilliantly, aren't we? Like, this is really good. And at every single point, kind of just reassuring that it was absolutely brilliant. And I, as I say, being surprised by it, I suppose, is wrong because it's Liverpool and they're the best team in the entire world. But I was surprised by quite how brilliant and confident and assured a performance it was, given what has happened over the last few weeks.
They start fast. There's the early Keita opportunity, which then leads Paul to the Mane header from the corner, where he may actually feel like he could have done a little bit better. You're not then far away from the Curtis Jones efforts. I think it was, you know, it was this sort of absolute momentum build of an opener where Leicester were just... I couldn't believe how far Liverpool pushed them back and how quick they pushed them back. And I think that Leicester might have wanted that, but it wasn't in a way Leicester wanted. Liverpool didn't play into Leicester's hands at all. They didn't fall for any of the traps.
No, I thought it was by design as well, to be honest. I think when you've got injury problems like we've got and we've got weaknesses, I think you're going to get... you're going to find them out in the first couple of minutes. So I think Liverpool were smart to come out and not let the game be felt out a little bit. And, oh, Vardy's having a bit of joy in behind Fabinho and Milner, for example. I thought it was important that Liverpool put them straight on the back foot from the off. And I think you might see that. I think it was something that you used to see a lot under Rodgers, is that we just come out and have a massive start to a game. And it's not really been... So Liverpool don't fly out the traps as much under Klopp. So I do wonder whether that's a good way of masking some issues, is almost try and use your strengths, which is in the area that we've got at the moment, which is our attackers and our midfielders, which is where we've actually got some numbers, and try and slap the opposition around a little bit to save showing where your weaknesses are. And I think Liverpool did that really, really well. The thing is that you are right. That's where Leicester can potentially expose your early doors as well. But there was none of that. So Liverpool, they were very organised for a team that haven't really trained together much, that have all been away on international duty and whatnot. I think you could see the benefits of Fabinho and Milner not being on international duty a little bit. It looks like they played a little bit together. It looked rehearsed. I thought Milner was outstanding as well. For a fella who was a right winger, a central midfielder, a left back, to just put in that level of performance at right back, sensational.
Just I'll come back to you on Milner in that it sets a tone, if not the tone, Paul, with reference to essentially Leicester, the crowd him. They want to get four around, and whenever they get the ball, they've got Justin on that side. They pull Maddison even over there a little bit as well. They've got Barnes over there. Vardy's looking to play a bit in that space. You know, there's four of them all sort of around him. And I think it just shows this Liverpool side, what I think it's often really good at is it turns opposition strengths into weaknesses, and it can turn its own perceived weakness into strengths. And you saw it all around Milner, because they tried to target Milner and then Milner ran the game.
That's it. So that's Liverpool's perceived weakness. And what it turned into was one of Liverpool's best strengths in the game. And I think that's a benefit you get from Milner, is, yeah, he doesn't have the legs. And we were talking last night, Rob, and you said he's not a footballer you get excited about. And I completely get what you're saying there. But I actually think if you're Trent Alexander-Arnold, you can learn a little bit from what Milner played there yesterday, especially in terms of quality of passing. So there's no doubt that Trent's the assist king in this country. Well, De Bruyne aside. But in his position, he's... By far the best. But what you were seeing was clever, quick passes out of right back that was completely bypassing the midfield into the likes of Jota. And I think if Trent was to have a little look at Milner's performance there yesterday, he goes, well, I've certainly got the tools in terms of technical ability to be playing them passes. It's not all crosses. And I think you got the benefit of almost like a Beckham-like right midfielder from Milner there yesterday, in terms of, okay, he's doing all his fullback bits, but he can push that far forward and join in with the midfield and bolster that. And I just think that the quality of one-touch passing, quick passing, hard passing into the forward line is just something that maybe Trent could go, well, I can do a bit of this as well.
I thought he dropped deep, though, that which they didn't want him to do. They thought that he was going to have to play Trent's role badly. I think that's what they were counting on. He dropped deep and he was almost like a number six, but out on the flank. Yeah. And you can tell he's a winger with those passes he was threading down the line. They were like low crosses, really. It was fine. He actually does one of those vintage passes from a left back-ish position that puts Mane away last season for the first goal at Anfield. He played that pass about six times in the first half. It was brilliant. Jota was thriving on it. He's the guy who gives us a platform in that game to build from. Without that first 10 or 15 minutes from James Milner, I'm not sure we get the game we saw.
I think, sorry, just to come back on that, even when he steps up into midfield, I think it's within 2 or 3 minutes of us making the Nico Williams, so he plays another defence splitting pass.
Yes.
He was absolutely outstanding. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, I think other than putting him in goal, we can pretty much just go absolutely any position, just slap James. He'd have a good go at it though, wouldn't he? Yeah. You know that he would. Just put him anywhere, it'll be fine.
It's one Amelia, where the overall sort of flavour of the performance just suggests the sheer determination from this side not to let this title go easily. I think this is one of my, you know, it's another significant, excellent performance against a significant opponent. There's been Arsenal, Chelsea, Everton, City, Leicester now added to that number. There is only really the Villa blemish within there. They deserve an enormous amount of credit for the focus and for the fact that they don't allow excuses into anything that they do. For me, that's the most impressive thing about them. We'll talk about what the manager said, as I said before, but the manager can say that. They're not saying that to each other. To each other, it's another game we need to go and win.
Yeah, and I know we say mentality monster so much that it's almost lost meaning, but the point is that it absolutely hasn't, because you can see it every single time. And I think, crucially, another thing I know we talk about a lot, but there's no one in the ground there. So it's not like beforehand we were all going, right, come on, we really need to get behind them. Like, the atmosphere here is what's going to make a massive difference. It's going to be like the away end that you had at Leicester on Boxing Day last year, which looked like it was just something else. Like, that you kind of, you don't have that to encourage them. So it's entirely down to them on the pitch. And like, obviously, we're listening to it with crowd noise on. You're not listening to that quiet stadium where they're kind of having to build that and to have that kind of assuredness and that confidence. And I've spent all week kind of veering, or last week rather, kind of veering between looking at the list of injuries and going, oh God, it's going to be absolutely awful. And then looking at the list of players that we've actually got. And I think when the team came out, Paul, you tweeted just going, that's absolutely sound.
Yeah.
And when you look at the players that you've got, you're going, those are 11 footballers better than anyone that Leicester can possibly play, because they're just the best footballers in the world.
For me, that 11 you put out yesterday is the best 11 in the country.
Yeah, it is.
In terms of what played this weekend. And I think that's the thing. Yeah, we, of course, we're nervous, and obviously we get another injury there yesterday, and then also the news that Shaqiri's injured as well. So we are continuing to lose numbers with every fixture. But when that team comes out yesterday, I'm almost taken back by it.
Yeah.
Because you have the week of the sort of press bullshit that's going on, and also our own fans' bullshit. And then you look and you've got an absolutely sound centre-half pair and two decent full-backs, a fantastic midfield, and that front three.
I sort of wonder what the Leicester dressing room is a bit like. The Rodgers was thinking, I could have done with another couple out.
Are you genuine? Yeah. You've seen Rodgers' after-match quotes. He's more or less, not quite saying that, but he's almost going, I don't see where the injuries are. And to the untrained eye, as I said, you go, Matip, it was the first pick in the Champions League final at centre-half alongside Van Dijk, so where's the injury at centre-half again? And you go, isn't Fabinho like an incredible defensive footballer wherever you play him? And then you go, and Roger, and you look at James Milner with the rest of the league respects, you know, well, he's not that's not a drop-off. The problem I think people sometimes, well, I'll qualify by saying, look at our bench. Clarkson's on the bench. We have gone from having the squad which was superlative, better than Bayern Munich's, better than Real Madrid's, the best squad in the world when Jota and Thiago arrived, to being a squad that is being tested now. It is being tested, because otherwise I think we'd be, I said this on the Friday show we did last week, otherwise we'd be pissing this. Now, we're given the impression of pissing it, but I think we're a swan on the surface, and below it, we're hanging in there, and no one should deny that.
But then below the surface, that you've just said, Thiago there, who will hopefully be back, if not, is going to be back very soon. And I think it's like anything in life, you can convince yourself of all of the things, you go, this is the worst possible situation in the world. And then you step back and someone says, well, actually, look at all the players that you've got there, and we're in a brilliant position. It's just, as you say, there's, I guess, the kind of the tipping point into things being actually very difficult is now much, much smaller or shorter than it would be otherwise, because that bench isn't the bench that you want.
I think we have to be at our very best, mental Liverpool at the moment. We have to. And I think we're inspired by the circumstances, but we do have to be at that level.
I want to do an old style back to front, which we haven't done for a while, but it's because I think almost everybody on the pitch is, well, not everybody on the pitch is worthy of praise for the performance they put in against Leicester. To start with the goalkeeper, Amelia, he's got such assurance. It's even for when he looks rash, there's a ball he plays forward where he charges out a goal and you're a bit like, what's he done there? And then you realise it's actually to Firmino's feet.
Yeah.
It is astonishing the assuredness he offers the whole team.
And you can see, I think, how confident, or I guess at ease, he is with the defenders that he's got there. Because you obviously often see him and Van Dijk shouting up to each other, or like if there is something where they're kind of going, fucking hell, that was a bit close, that it didn't really seem like there was he's obviously looking at those players and going, they're four excellent defenders and I am absolutely fine with this.
For me, Robbie, I feel like he almost embodies the thing he needs to be in quite an interesting way. So, for instance, yesterday there's a lot of stuff where he's coming off his line to have to deal with, and there's a lot of stuff where... So I'll be that goalkeeper for a while, but when I need to be the other type of goalkeeper, I can be that one. What Amelia's saying there, I do wonder if, you know, if him and the manager have had a conversation and the manager said, you're just going to absolutely be the calmest man in the ground, because those lads in front of you need to think you're the calmest man in the ground. You're going to bail them out. I think it's in a really... unostentatious way. I just think it's an excellent performance from him.
Yes, I mean, I think he's probably come under more pressure against the likes of West Ham and Sheffield than he did against Leicester, if I can just sort of qualify it with that again. The Harvey Barnes chance being the only one, I think, and he wouldn't have got near that had Harvey Barnes hit the target. That troubles me. He makes his covering on the Justin effort in the first half. I'm not sure he gets down to a save where Andy Robbo sort of sweeps it clear. I'm not sure that was the greatest save in the world in another circumstance. But his general calmness he allows a defence that perhaps didn't want to have to play that high to play that bit higher again. I thought last night and to sweep behind them as you're suggesting. I thought he was good, but we didn't really need vintage Alisson yesterday.
He just nullifies Vardy as well. That's my big concern this week. And this sounds really geeky, but I've even been playing FIFA with the back four that I thought we were going to play this week, and I was a bit like, the one thing I was worried about was pacing behind, and it's the thing that Jamie Vardy's got in abundance. But when you've got a goalkeeper that can come off his line 20, 30 yards and then play balls into feet under pressure, it completely nullifies Vardy's strength. So that Vardy is the old fashioned centre forward, and the Michael Owen break the line sort of guy. But if that ball's going in behind and your goalkeeper, despite all the possession we have and the dominance we have, is completely concentrated, and I think that's the main thing about him, he concentrates throughout despite very little pressure a lot of the time. Is that if he's off his line at the right moment all the time taking them balls, what can Vardy do?
The centre-halves also do a very good job, Paul. Exactly. I think for me it was really interesting looking at Liverpool's line, looking at the way both of them played. They both cleared the lines really effectively. They're quite happy just to send it at times, and I think that's what we're going to possibly see from both of them. But when they can play, they do play. I thought they were excellent, but I was really intrigued about how they'd be quite high, but when they needed to, they would just drop. And it wasn't as though we're just keeping this line because this is where our line is, which is, I think, is a lot of how we play with Van Dijk and with Gomez, because they've got so much recovery pace. To me, it was really interesting how it would be. We're really quite high, but when we need to, we just go 20 yards further back for a bit, because we'll just sort it all out from there.
The one thing neither of them two are is shaky, I would say. Matip, you've seen him dribble the ball out. It's never the most pleasing thing on the eye, but he's very composed. You can tell that he used to play holding midfield when he was at Schalke. Fabinho is obviously a midfielder as well, but I think them dropping and absorbing pressure almost takes the pressure off them a little bit. So being stepping up further up the pitch and leaving stuff in behind is where they don't want to be, but that's where Gomez and Van Dijk come alive, because they've got such recovery pace. But when they had to, for them too, I think dropping back just strengthens them even more. But as I said, coupled with Alisson behind you and not having that recovery pace, I just thought it was like a perfect cocktail of things that was going on.
They're where the crisis was meant to be. And then when the team sheet comes out, you sort of have them. Actually, centre midfield could be a bit better. I'll come on to talk about that in a minute, in that all three played marvellously, I thought. And then obviously Keita gets the injury. But this is the very bones of the crisis. And yet, they were, as Paul says, an excellent way to describe them is unhurried. Very, very calm.
The midfield?
No, the two centre-halves. Very, very calm. Very commanding. I mean, both fucking massive, which counts. And it really, really, really helped me. They both look like big lads. And that really pleased me. You know, you wouldn't have a problem in any way, shape, or form, Rob, just imagining them as a pairing in 95% of Premier League games.
No, that was the thing. I mean, the thing when you lose Van Dijk is you worry aerially. You don't want to be prey to the Premier League's set piece merchants, and they don't feel like they will be. I know we got caught out against Everton by who was it, that keen header where Matip sort of muscled a bit, but he looked much more authoritative in the air yesterday, and Fabinho's a big lad. I think this is a massive if you can keep them fit, and and playing alongside each other, they will develop a partnership, and we'll be saying that's as potent a pairing as there is in this league. And the only better pairing was the two lads who got injured, because it's at our club. So you've got to find a way of almost mothballing them. Playing, they never play more than once in every 7 days. That is going to be the key from here on in. They have all the tools, all the ability, the concentration levels, the class, everything, but it's keeping them together.
Who plays instead then for Atalanta?
That is a question.
Don't hurry me, Amelia. We'll get there.
Sorry. Tell me who isn't Matt Phillips. I've made that mistake a few times. Yeah. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, we'll get there. Don't worry. Left back, Amelia. There's something for me. The way Leicester play, because they're trying to all put the pressure on Milner, they end up in a situation where they've only really got all Brighton and weirdly Fofana playing that side. So they create a situation where Fofana's one-on-one with Manny, and all Brighton's one-on-one with Andy Robertson, and Andy Robertson absolutely makes a show of all Brighton. And I think all Brighton's a very good pro. I think he's a good player, but Andy Robertson dominates the game, and that's where the second goal comes from, when with one touch, he just ghosts away.
No, absolutely. I know that it's every single game, but I'm never not surprised by how far up the pitch he always seems to be. When you're just like, he can just do what he wants. He can very much just, he can do whatever he wants because he knows he has complete control and he's so confident in that position. And it's very nice that that's one that hasn't been affected in the last few weeks.
When you say he can do what he wants, it does seem as though if sides are going to approach us the way Leicester do now, I think Liverpool have worked out that if they're going to play this shape where they have one wing back on one side and then target our right back area, then we basically let Andy Robertson dictate a whole flank. Yeah. And I think it is bold and brave, but as you say, because he has such assurance and such quality, we just relax with it.
But in the way that Milner did, in the way that Trent always does, it's obviously something that Andy Robertson is capable of doing that he often does and that he will be comfortable continuing to do.
I find it interesting that there's a period where we were having periods of games, everything's coming down the left and we go, Robbo's playing well, isn't he? And he did. He was exceptional last night. And then there's periods where he's not getting in the game and he's penned back because, and you can see it last night, we are providing such problems whether we go through our left flank or our right flank that the opposition managers are just looking at the last game and going, well, it's obviously all about the right flank and Trent and Salah. We'll overload there. And they come out, the neck is scratching their heads going, but fucking hell, Robertson and Mane have just ripped us a new one. But this yin-yanging is happening all season long. Do you remember the early games where I think Robertson was very, very effective and then he seemed to be blunted for about three or four? And swings and roundabouts.
I think it's just the benefit of having the best right-hand side of footballers in the world and the best left-hand side.
I know, right? Yeah.
who thought it would be such a such a positive? But no, you're right. I mean, how do you prepare for that? Well, during the match yesterday, I was watching Robertson and going, for someone who's probably known as one of the top two left-backs in the world, I think he's underrated.
I
honestly do, because I was watching him going, he's the embodiment of everything that Klopp's achieved at Liverpool. He comes from Hull for £8 million, unearthed an absolute diamond, who's now one of the best footballers in the world. And it's his work rate, I'm even watching things like that stupid wingmen thing him and Trent are doing and going, this is everything that we've arrived at as a football club in terms of personality, character. For me, I know he's a bastard, but he's likeable, he's funny.
He's our bastard.
But it is also that he ends up, and I think it's really interesting how it happens, he ends up with a personal battle with all Brighton, and then he just wins it.
But that's it.
And that's something which it actually doesn't happen quite as much in football as people think. Normally there's another pair of hands. Someone will come and help you out if you're under a bit of pressure. But the way Leicester had set up, it was as though Rodgers had gone, I will just take a draw in the All Brighton Robertson. If I get a draw in the All Brighton Robertson thing, we could win the game. And what happens is Andy Robertson says, no, I'm going to win the All Brighton Robertson thing 5-0. Watch this.
Yeah, he knocks him out a couple of times, doesn't he? I think that's it. I mean, the one touch stuff he does when I think the thing we maybe underestimate is how much Mane helps him as well. Mane is such a clever footballer. For someone who makes such stupid mistakes in football games, I must say, Mane sometimes, that in terms of his dropping in to let Robertson go, I was watching Harry Kane do that at the weekend in terms of smart movements, and you associate that with a centre-forward, someone like Ings and Kane who drop in and let a runner go past them. The way that Mane does it, you don't see from a winger, because a winger's either running with it and his full-back's going one side of him, or he's the link in between that. But Mane drops in and lets Robertson go because Robertson can do the winger thing, and there's not many... You see fullbacks trying to do what wingers do. But if anything, Robertson, once he's in that last third of the pitch, his delivery is better than any winger. And I think it's so important in terms of the way that we play. But that cross, Jesus.
The only other thing, I know that like we all hate international football and it's shit and pointless and robs us of all of our favourite people, but someone like Robertson coming back from that, having achieved something that Scotland's men's team anyway haven't done for a very, very long time. And then also you look at Bobby Firmino who comes back with that kind of like the pomp and the swagger that Bobby Firmino is always meant to have, and that's how he scores goals. And kind of rather than spend an entire season going, oh, when's Bobby going to score at Anfield? We just get to watch him do it and kind of almost do it twice, really. But that for Andy Robertson, you could kind of see that if you come back from something like that with the confidence and like the kind of, obviously the buzz that there will have been in the Scottish side, that he comes back and just goes, I am one of the best footballers in the world. I'm going to get to represent my country on this incredible international stage. Come on then, Leicester.
Yeah, they weren't mentally tired because of their successes.
And the same can be said also for Ronaldo, who has another good international break, as he so often does, and then comes back to Liverpool and does a very different
job. Loves a goal for Holland, doesn't he?
Absolutely loves a goal for Holland.
It's getting to the point where it's almost negligent not to try and get that out of him. But that's another conversation.
Well, I think that would come in Klopp's ideal world, to be honest with you. It wouldn't surprise me if Klopp's ideal world this season was Henderson and Thiago deep with Ronaldo joining the front.
Yeah.
But we'll that's one for another day. For this day, Rob, He, in conjunction with Jones, and I think it's interesting that it felt as though it was when Alderman Jones a little deeper and Keiter ahead as the game wore on. He and Jones just offer so much control in the middle of the park there for Liverpool, and show the importance of being brave, being strong technical footballers, and being literally strong footballers, the pair of them.
Yeah, I mean, where'd you start? They were fantastic. But I do think you have to talk about the three of them as a body of work there, because, you know, for a new midfield, everything was so synergistic that they did. Keita, they used as the first line of the press, because that's what Keita does. He is a pressing monster, albeit a very often injured pressing monster. But he did his parts significantly enough.
He was excellent.
Yeah, I mean, he played very, very well, such that another kick in the teeth when he pulls up. Ginny, you expect that from him, but it's still remarkable, and he's played a lot of football and he has to be rested at some point, but we'll talk about that a bit later on. Curtis is the performance, though, where you have to be the biggest takeaway, because, Jesus, he's what, just 20, Curtis still. We know he's got... My worry always about him, and it sounds weird to say worry because I'm a massive fan, is that he's Coutinho, right? And he could grow to be Coutinho, but he's not a midfield player, but he's showing he's a midfield player. He's learning the not the dark arts, but the selfless arts that you have to have. He's learning to play one touch, not to be ambitious, but he's still keeping that bit with him. You can see the moments where he had half a yard and the muscle memory is clicking. He goes, you're Curtis Jones. Remember, you can actually take another touch and twat it if you want. I mean, he didn't quite get to that position, but have a little look up, spray a pass.
Go past someone,
exactly. Because, I mean, Curtis is an incredible dribbler. We're not really seeing that, but I think he's paying his dues at the moment, and I think this is all going to start. I mean, the early Steven Gerrard was a Jew paying a midfield player rather than the creative force he became later on.
It's sacrifice, isn't it? That's what you find with young footballers. So I think when Rafa comes in, there's a quote about Gerrard where he says, like, I don't need him to be here, there and everywhere. I need him to be focused in terms of the role he's doing. Conserve his energy for the bits where he needs to do that sprint. Because Gerrard was a bit of a headless chicken as a younger footballer. Very, very high impact. And I think what you're seeing with Jones now is, yes, he's got all this technical ability to do the Coutinho thing and dribble all he likes, but actually, no, you're part of the body of this midfield three. So you need to sacrifice that part of your game. And part of the exciting thing about young football is that they're raw and you get to see all their ability at once, because it hasn't been quite trained out of them. They're like freaking puppies, aren't they? you do this and you don't do that, but you get to see it all when they're young. But obviously in terms of the makeup of an 11, they've got to sacrifice some things to make the balance work. And that was the most impressive things about Curtis Jones yesterday was, I'm always very sceptical about young footballers playing in key positions like that. I'm always feel like we were talking about Milner at right back being a weakness. Actually, no, I think Jones in the midfield today, if I was Brendan Rodgers, I'd be going, he'll make a mistake. His immaturity will make him make a mistake, and that's where you've got to pounce on it. There was none of that from him whatsoever.
Just come back to you on that, because I think one of the things that Liverpool are very, very good is making, and part of what they do to Leicester all the time is make the footballers be serious. And for instance, as a comparison sort of point of young English players who've impressed at different times across the last couple of years, one is James Maddison. And then Jones impacts that game much more than Maddison.
Mm.
Much more in terms of keeping it ticking over, looking after it, looking after his teammates. And I do think that one of the things I always take away from games against Leicester is how I ultimately wouldn't have any of their lads. If you know what I mean, like I watch a Leicester game and I come away and I always think, you know, there's a lot of people who, for instance, you could pay a lot of money to get James Maddison, you know, 60 million quid. Somebody will, either this summer coming or next, or the summer that follows, possibly Manchester United, and I hope it is. My point being is I don't want it to be Liverpool because I want seriousness of purpose. And I think that's the bit that's always lacking with Leicester. And Jones, who should be our least serious, was our most serious.
Mm.
And I think that that's what you see with this Liverpool team.
I think that's a really good point. It's not, I hadn't thought about it in that sense, really. But again, that's it, isn't it? I mean, it's maturity from someone you're not expecting to be mature. And I don't know, what's Maddison got a couple of years on him?
More than that.
Yeah, 24.
And yeah, would you swap them? No, I don't think you would. And not even for just that one fixture. You know, you might think Jones's trajectory gets him to where Maddison is now, but actually, I think what he's shown yesterday is
where Maddison is now. If not,
he is, and there's probably, well, Maddison's not even been getting a game every week. So there's an argument he's plateauing. So if you're Curtis Jones, you've got to look at Maddison and go, I can't stagnate the way Maddison has, Dele Alli has. Mm. I've got to get to that point where I'm a respected footballer across the country. And then I've got to push on. He's definitely got the tools. I think Rob's right to say he's got a lot about Coutinho, about him, especially in terms of like swapping feet in terms of beating footballers and stuff. But I think a lesson is, okay, Maddison and Grealish was in the same conversation, and if anything, maybe 18 months ago, Maddison's winning that conversation, but look at where Grealish is going now. Look at his trajectory. And this is someone who was back page of the papers with a ciggy in his hand in a gutter. You know, that's where Jack Grealish was. He was a bit of a joke of a footballer a couple of years ago. I don't think Curtis Jones will be allowed at Liverpool in that circle to go down that route, but look at how he's come back and look at how he's going forward. That's, Jones has got to do that, but I think actually his raw ability might be better.
And by grabbing responsibility, we mentioned there before with Keita leading the press, Amelia, he gets given responsibility, Keita. And I think one of the things that's so impressive about this manager, and we talk about him so fondly and so often, but the players he surrounds himself with and the way he works with them is he's happy to give them responsibility. And he trusts his boys. And I think that it's easy to say that, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes we sit around before the match and we worry and etc., etc. He's happy to give them responsibility. And I thought for 55 minutes, and it is such a shame about the injury, Keita, who, you know, has had a couple of slightly dodgy games here and there, I thought was absolutely tremendous.
I think that's the point, is that sometimes we don't, and I think with Keita, it's not necessarily for lack of goodwill, it's because we haven't actually gotten to see him all that much when you think of how long he has actually been a Liverpool player now, and it's longer than you think. It somehow always feels a bit like it's his first season, but it's not, or his second season rather, but it just, I think because we haven't seen that much of him, and because when we do get to see him, you see sometimes absolute brilliance, which is why Rob continues to write fan letters every single night to him. But I think that
I've stopped.
Sometimes it's middling. Sometimes you're disappointed by it. Sometimes you don't actually really notice him very much when he's there, which is why I think you sometimes see Naby's name and you go, okay, we'll see how that goes. But Jürgen's the one that sees him in training. Jürgen's the one that knows how well he can play and that trusts him, as you say, crucially trusts him to go and be brilliant.
In the same way, I just Googled to check James Maddison's age, it comes up and it says that he wants to be the main man for Leicester in England. The main man, I'm intrigued by, because Curtis Jones wants to be one of the main men for Liverpool, and Naby Keita wants to be one of the main men for Liverpool, but Liverpool play with 11 main men.
Yeah.
And I think you got to see it with Keita there yesterday, that Keita is, there's lots of his performance where what I enjoyed was it wasn't that showy.
No.
It was, there's a job to be done. It's a serious job of work. We're going to do it. And I'm going to show my range of ability, but to do the job of work. And it was a blow on a personal level to see him go down, to be honest with you. I made a wry comment on Hot Mike, like he's this week's injury, because there was going to be one. But it is actually a blow, because I think if there was ever a time for him to put a run of games together where he gets five of the next seven or something like that, we'd be pairing once it was finished.
Yeah. He's played two for Guinea, which I think he needed, because he needed games. It is terribly unlucky. I mean, the weird thing about him is he wasn't an injury-prone footballer at Leipzig. You know, there's enough seasons there to be able to draw a graph on it. He had the odd hamstring injury, but not this recurrent stuff that he's going through now. We saw after the restart last season that when you give him the run of games, he's as good a midfielder as we have. And, you know, and I think you're right. He does get the balance. He does get the balance right most of the time. And that yesterday it was, look, there's no Henderson, no Fabinho, no Thiago in that midfield. It's just you and Ginny, really, and a kid. You need to be responsible. So you didn't really see Naby drop his shoulder and go past people. Only maybe one little moment in the first half, but he didn't really... He sacrificed. He just put himself down. He was flying into things. Well, I mean, in a controlled way. He was, yeah, he was excellent. It really is a blow, again.
Next one, just to sort of touch on, is, well, is all the front three, but we will start off with Jota, is ability, Paul. The sheer excitement that he generates now, I think, is fascinating. He's a strange footballer to watch in that he doesn't look quick, but no one catches him. He doesn't look like, for instance, he's going to be that good in the air. He's got a few headers for us now and puts himself about. He's an absolute workhorse. I think that's worth saying as well. He is an absolute workhorse up there. None of it looks... He is not a silky footballer, but he goes round people. There is... I absolutely adore watching him as he scraps brilliantly around the pitch.
I don't know quite what to say on Jota, to be honest with you. I thought he was a good footballer at Wolves, and I was quite excited when we signed him. And when people were saying Thiago was the marquee signing of the summer, I get that because of all he's done in the game. I was excited about Jota because I didn't quite have a handle on how good he was. But I had a feeling that Edwards and Klopp wouldn't have been dropping 45 million quid in this market unless they absolutely knew how good he was. So when we signed him, I wondered whether the 45 million now was the 30 million pounds what Sadio Mane and Mo Salah was. And I think they're being proved absolutely right to have unearthed someone that wasn't, you know, Jimenez linked with Man United every other week. You know, he's a good footballer and you hear of the big sums. But I didn't really see that about Jota in terms of tons of interest from all the big clubs. You know, there was not... Tottenham were going to sign him to pair him, but they're two at the time, or, you know, there wasn't that Real Madrid, Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, whoever was in for him. He's having an impact like Salah had, like, or maybe even in excess of what Mane had, which was amazing when he first arrived. The numbers are phenomenal for a fella who didn't start a lot at the beginning of the season. But... I mean, he can do everything. There was an article in the week that was saying that he's the replacement for Cristiano Ronaldo for Portugal, and that they think he'll get goal scoring numbers to that level. And how can you argue with it when you can score a header of that quality, but then you're seeing him taking half volleys in some games, absolute poachers' goals and all that. You can score from distance. What can he do? I don't think he looks on the eye as in any shape what the likes of an elite footballer looks. He's quite scrappy in a way, but he can do it all. It's unbelievable.
Do you know what it is? He's so quick.
Yeah.
I'd watched his YouTubes and I thought, because when you sign a wide player, I want speed down the sides. That's just give me that. And
that's
trust.
The thing I thought we weren't getting.
I thought we weren't getting that. It looked like he wanted to come inside and use a very sort of aggressive dribbling style where it sort of bounces off shins and thighs and works for him. That's what it looked a bit like.
A Suarez-y almost.
A bit Suarez. Yeah, a poor man Suarez, though. Now watching him now, I think he's doing everything so quickly. It's almost like he's playing. I think he's slightly damned him with faint praise at the beginning. Then I think he's much more technically.
I think he is,
I think he needs to be watched in slow motion. There's a bit in that move early on. Does it end with a Keita shot or one of the ones just afterwards in the first half? Was it just a lovely little flick he does?
Yeah, no, I think he is. I think he's tremendous, and I do think he is technically tremendous. But my point is that it all looks. It is just a tiny little bit scruffy, and that's fine. There's bits that Salah does that are remarkably scruffy, and I actually think that there might be a little... One of the things I think Liverpool do well is look beyond playing style and what it directly looks like. I think this is one of the things they've done well with recruitment. There's a lot of what Mane does that's really unconventional when you stop to think about it. Sometimes it looks like he, for instance, traps it badly when he actually knocks it 10 yards away from himself, knowing he's then going to go and get it. And if you just watch that footballer for the first time, someone would say, oh, that's not a very good touch, and you realise it's a great touch. I think Salah does loads of stuff in penalty boxes that look scruffy, but the outcomes are amazing, and it's why he doesn't get the respect he deserves. And I think with Jota, we've got another one who's in that sort of mould. That's what I genuinely think, that it's deceiving the eye how good he is.
Yeah, it's a combination of being very economic, it's very deliberately disruptive, it's playing percentages, but he's very much in the mould. He's almost like a hybrid of all of, you know, of the tradition that actually now goes back to Suarez. So I think Suarez somewhere along the line is in the mix there. I think he's incredible.
There's that old saying about, was it Jeff 20, where Shankly used to go, but is he a Liverpool player? He's absolutely a Liverpool player.
Yeah.
In terms of unpredictability, pace, which is, again, the thing that has surprised me most.
Graft.
You know, there's the Lindis thing about him being a pressing monster, isn't there? He's all the things. I'm so surprised that someone that I just thought was coming into for a big... I didn't think he was going to be rubbish, but I didn't think he was coming in to give you the conversation about breaking the front three up this quick. And I just don't know how you play without them.
The surprise of it is the key joy of it. I think because it gets announced, we were all waiting on the day that it got announced to hear about Thiago and whether that happened. And then it was almost like a footnote too, that it was like, oh, we've got Thiago. Oh, and also Diogo Jota. And obviously, even though he was playing for Wolves, it felt like we knew less about him because there's not that kind of esteem that comes with you getting Thiago and he's Thiago. And it was like a bit of a footnote, the signing. And then you watch him, and also he's got to play a lot more than Thiago. I know they're in different positions, but it's just... it's been surprising how brilliant he is, how quickly he's kind of just shown himself to be a Liverpool player, and also the fact that he's shown himself capable of scoring every single kind of goal. So it feels like we're only just starting to scratch the surface on how brilliant he is going to be for us.
The other thing he feels like to me, Rob, is he feels part of the unit in a really interesting way very quickly, but also his reaction to, for instance, Firmino scoring. Jota was delighted that Firmino scored, and it would be, you know, there will be... At some point, Paul mentions they're breaking up the front three. At some point, there will be a decision to be made between the two of them. The manager may, you know, he'll go where he goes, and that'll happen over the course of the season. But there's none of that nonsense at Liverpool. You could see Jota, and not just Jota, the whole team was delighted when Firmino scored because he'd done everything but. Yeah. Also, I thought he started deeper, Firmino. He was joining things up more, but he actually gets in the penalty area a hell of a lot over the course of the game. That was the other thing I very much liked. He gets a lot of chances. Now, we'd be having a different conversation if he doesn't score the header from the corner, because what you're able to say is he gets his goal and he could have had another two. If he hadn't got his goal, we would be having he didn't get his goal. It's worth pointing that out, but that's the point, is that even for Roberto Firmino, goals still pay the rent.
Yeah, but I'd have gone, Firmino, it goes on. But to tell you what we would have said, at least he got in positions, because what's characterised Firmino this season is that he hasn't been getting in positions to score goals, hasn't been getting shots away. But just I was sort of talking about Jota in the context of him. I think the way we're going to use Jota, we should reprise, is that golden 3 months we had, certainly in attacking positions, when we had Coutinho with the front three, and we were able to change them in and out. And funnily enough, the only times it floundered in one or two games when he played the four together, I think. And I think you saw that against City. Although we put in a solid enough performance at the Etihad, I thought we crowded Jota. There wasn't room for Jota in that game. There was too many. He almost had to be a sort of auxiliary fullback at times. I think we've just got to simply... It's not about Jota or Firmino. It's about the four of them. It's about you just take out the man who needs a rest or is maybe a little bit out of form. It's three from four. Just do that.
You can sleep easy.
Yeah.
And that's what's so good about it is like...
It's where we want it to be.
Imagine a world without... imagine games without Mo Salah against Leicester.
I
didn't think about him once.
No.
You know, and that's Mo Salah. And there's games where... The one you miss most is Mane.
Yeah.
It's always been the case that if Mane doesn't play, Liverpool don't look as good. But a tonic for that is someone of the ability of Jota, because he's not going to do the things Mane does. He's not the things Mane does. No other footballer in the world does, in terms of he's quite unique as a footballer. Mane in this dropping into weird holes, but then also playing through the middle and then dominating a fullback. But Jota can score goals out of nothing, and that's the difference that he's got from all the others, especially in a world where your number nine didn't look like scoring. Firmino, for me yesterday, though, was, I mean, I've been quite vocal in my criticism of him. He looked like Roberto Firmino yesterday, and that's what I took from the game, is maybe his little break with the Brazil team and the change of scenery doesn't well. The other thing I'm going to say in his defence is he's the greatest showman, Firmino, when he's there. He may as well have his little hat on, you know. I think crowd energy is something that he might be missing in terms of, you know, his celebrations and stuff like that. I think he might get the most adrenaline from the crowd. I think he loves putting on a show, and it does make me wonder whether his drop-off has pretty much coincided with no fans being in the ground. Mm. And
the goals were drying up.
The goals, and as you say, that's what pays the rent for a number nine. But he does offer so much more. So it's such a difficult position to be in, because you're not quite Liverpool without him. But there's a level of expectation that comes with playing number nine for Liverpool, where he has to score goals. I mean, he's what? Is it 1 centimetre away from a brace yesterday?
Like 3 millimetres.
Yeah. Amazing. I thought it was an amazing performance. And I have leathered him on the Anfield Wrap a few times. And to be honest with you, I'm hoping he's turning over a page in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net again. The header's great.
The header's great. He's tremendous throughout. Last little thing is Mane. Emilia, who's just so dangerous, so electric. And I think, again, pushes Leicester back. They decide that they're going to almost sacrifice the left. And all of a sudden, all Brighton's getting battered. Fofana, who actually plays pretty well throughout the game, deals with Mane relatively well, loses that battle on points. Mane has the better of him as it wears on. And another day, Mane comes away with 2 goals.
Yeah, no, that's the only thing that is missing from it. But he is the best footballer in the world. I'd say it all the time, and I truly believe it. But he does a lot of putting pressure on Schmeichel as well, and kind of like, he doesn't give him a second to think about where he's going to play the ball. Mm. And you can see him getting like flapped by it over and over again, that he doesn't really have a chance to think about the next move that he makes, because Sadio Mane is right there. And I think the only thing with Sadio Mane that is often overlooked is that he does actually need a rest, and he never ever gets one. And he's one of the only players that he's lucky if he gets a minute or two at the end of game where he gets taken off and rested. And I think it's to his credit, because he never looks like he needs one. But as you've just said, he's the one player that we really miss when he's not there more than anyone. I truly believe.
If you had to keep one, he's the one I keep.
He's the one you keep always, and he's the one where you go, like you notice it in ways that you don't even expect to if he's not there. And I just think we almost take for granted that he's always fit and that he never seems to need a rest until he actually does need a rest and until he's not fit. And that's why it's one that needs to be thought about.
I really enjoy Carragher's man crush on him, by the way. every game, you can just, every time Mane does something good on Carragher's on commentary, it's like Sadio, like you can hear Carragher like a fan. He's pairing over him, and he's absolutely right too. And you've got, when we're not in the ground, you've got to just enjoy the footballers a little bit more for what they bring. And I miss going to the match. Yesterday really hit home how much I miss going to the match. I was even texting like Anfield Wrap WhatsApp groups yesterday, like how desperate I was to go out after the match.
You weren't alone there.
But that was one certainly where I really wanted to be in the ground and watch it, because with all the adversity that came throughout the week and all the injuries and how down I felt, and I know Rob's took a bit of flack for being a miserable sod this week.
Rightly so, you are a miserable sod.
But anyway, it was one where you'd have just loved to be there to see them cure all your nerves. And it's quite depressing, actually, in terms of not being in there. But when they put on a show and you're just watching it on the telly, you fall in love with the footballers all over again, don't you? And That's the ultimate thing. You've said, Rob, I don't care if I'm in the ground, I just want to see Liverpool win. And Liverpool,
I do want to be in the ground.
But Liverpool winning is a thing, and winning in that way, in them circumstances, again, these fixtures against Leicester seem to be a little bit special for Liverpool. It was last year. It certainly has been this year. I felt really positive to be a Liverpool fan yesterday. I was buzzing like I would have been buzzing after coming out of the ground.
It was a massive win. It was a signature win, you know. And you know, for feeling worried about our future as I have been, that felt like, God, that was a marker performance in many respects. Can I just say one final thing on Mane? Because we're sort of intimating, I think, that he's our best player, and I think that's true. He does remind me of, although there's obviously some stylistic differences, is Dalgleish from my youth. is that whatever was going on in the game, you just thought, just give the ball to Kenny. Just give it to Kenny. He'll just take a moment with it, and you can all realign. He was
just foot on the ball sometimes, which is not Liverpool.
Yeah, so, that's like, what I mean.
So sometimes, like Liverpool are driving forward, and it's typical Liverpool in terms of counter press, counter attack. But then Mane just stops and puts his foot on the ball and cuts back inside and has a little look, and you're like, okay, he's clever.
He's a conductor. He's deciding the tempo, and that's what Dalglish did. He goes, no, it works how I make it. So you give it to him, and he takes the minutes out of the game.
But he doesn't take that touch where you stuff. I can't think of one off the top of my head. You take a touch too many.
Like a Coutinho when he wasn't playing well.
I suppose so. But breaks the whole play down. You're right in terms of his conductor, like. I'm trying to think of the word. Sorry, I'm getting a bit muddled. But in terms of he takes the touch, and he's absolutely right too, when everyone's bombing ahead and he's gone, no, hang on, we slow this down and we figure them out.
Well, when he does that, and I think it's a great observation from Rob, because what I think he actually does, because they're so panicked, because he's Sadio Mane and he is so fast and so good with the ball, what actually happens is it isn't just that our lads go past him, but their lads do as well. Mm. And they end up almost quite badly positioned when he takes his little touch and has his little look, because they're at Sadio Mane panic stations, and Sadio Mane is the coolest man on the ground.
Yeah, it's like dummy and 21 of the footballers. Yeah.
I have to say, the quintessential Sadio Mane moment, maybe the iconic one, will always be the penalty he gets in the Champions League final for me. He gets that ball and he puts his body position is just so elegant, you know, but he's unconfident, and he pulls his shoulders back, puts his foot on the ball, and he has a little look, and Tottenham are, I don't know what the fuck he's about to do, and he goes, what you're going to do is you're going to handle this. and out of sheer panic, because the defender in the final, what's his name?
He's
terrified with what's next in Mane's head.
That he forgets how to play football, he's that scared of what's
The manager has a big go afterwards that we've seen, Amelia. He finds himself, it's an interesting one, because he's clearly up the wall, and I think also he's emotional, I think, with the loss of Keita, and in general, I think he's somebody who feels as though he's not being properly heard. I think this is quite interesting. It happens after the Manchester City game, him and Guardiola speak in concert, arguably, and now it happens after this one. He is most definitely vexed by the intensity in the run of games.
Yeah, I think... because he is a hero and because of who he is, you also forget that he's a person. And then sometimes when you watch him doing press conferences or when you watch him doing post-match reaction, you go, oh yeah, he is a person, and that he can be incredibly frustrated. He can be angry. He can be upset about things that happen on the pitch. And he can also be a little bit fed up of us sometimes, kind of wanting so much and wanting things that are unreasonable or impossible in terms of human physicality. And I think that, yeah, he does a good job of balancing all of those competing interests and hopes and dreams and still being the person that we love so much.
I think he showed not a frailty, but a humanity, as merely so, humanity that shows how much pressure he feels under personally. Because he made an important point in the middle of that, or maybe it was unguarded. He goes, I don't just put out people in red shirts, you know. Mm. You know, almost because that's sort of the argument against the likes of me, who go, Trent gets injured because you don't rest him, Jürgen. But I think his argument would be, you want me to win football matches. This is my job. You know, it's a bit like I'll use a very strange metaphor, but in hospitality, Paul, we go, you know, in the current climate, we understand why, but we're being told to be inhospitable in the hospitality industry, and it's an anathema to us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, keep your people apart, make them do this, make them do that. Well, for a football manager, tell him not to play his players. That's the solution is mad. You know, yes, they've all bought into, I think for all top managers, I've got squads and they've all bought into rotation. But this is making them look at the policy of rotation in a different way, I think, and going, well, fucking hell, we're just having to do this now. I can't put out teams which look like the teams I built a team, and now I can't put that team out in any meaningful sense because I have to keep resting them. And look what's happening whilst I try to strike what used to be a reasonable balance. They're dropping like flies, and this just doesn't feel right for them and for me as a man expected to do the job at the level he's expected to do it.
I think there's something, Paul. The thing about the manager is the manager's always looking ahead, and I think that far better than most of his contemporaries. Most of his peers don't look ahead as impressively as he does.
Yeah, he's not one game at a time, despite the fact he preaches it.
Yeah, he sits down. He looks like, for instance, he knew immediately there was going to be a problem after we went through in the League Cup last season with the Aston Villa game and the Club World Cup. He spoke about it immediately after the match. The same thing happened with the Shrewsbury thing. He spoke about it immediately after the match with the winter break. I think he's looking ahead here as much as anything else. I think he's looking deep into December, maybe even into January. January, yeah. and saying this is absolutely what you are asking now is just going to do in not just my players. And I think it was good he was very clear on that. It wasn't just his players. He was basically saying the footballers.
Yeah, I watched that a couple of times last night, so I'm quite across his details. Firstly, I think with Jürgen is, I think we know as Liverpool fans, yeah, of course he's got skin in the game in this. But he's not being Liverpool centric. Of course he wants the best for Liverpool, but he is foreseeing a problem which I think he thinks is league wide. So he says, firstly, I think he's not a prick about it in terms of, you see some posts, like I watched Arteta yesterday, the way he was with a reporter, and he's very frosty. Guardiola can be that way sometimes. I think Klopp actually says to Jeff Shreves, he goes,
it's not you.
You've got to, I'm only being like this because you've got the Sky microphone in front of you. I know it's not you. Yeah. I quite enjoy our interviews. And I thought, he's like, but nobody's listening to me. So I think him and Guardiola have had a chat on this. I think that they're very much in tandem.
He picked a win to go for it as well. He used the wave of emotion from the Keita injury and the win, two things to go, I'm going for this.
But he talks about a couple of things which I thought was interesting. He references BT as the problem. So he's saying it's Champions League and then Champions League or Europa League teams being picked by BT for the 12:30 fixture on a Saturday, which is a joke.
Yeah.
He's absolutely right. Liverpool played Sunday night at 7 p.m. That should be, them late fixtures should now be, as they would be in any other league, the late fixture on the Sunday. He also says something about COVID, which I thought was really interesting, but something I'd said in the week is the rule book's been ripped up in terms of structure of football.
Yeah.
He said, so the only thing that hasn't changed, he said, you've got a mask on. When did you think a year ago you'd be interviewing me 2 metres apart with a mask on? He's like, 12:30 is bollocks.
Yeah.
And that you could now play football matches at 10 p.m. at night and you would still probably get the same viewing figures or a marginal difference. Just 12:30 on a Saturday.
When you played on
a Wednesday night in Kiev, which is about as far as you can go now, isn't it? And then you play that. It's not right on a human level. I think he's absolutely right. But the last thing on this is, the one thing Klopp is a geek. He's sciencey. I always reference Rory's post and Rory's piece in the New York Times and just how excited you could see about the stuff
the nutritionist was
doing at Liverpool. Klopp looks at all this stuff, I think, a bit more than all the other 19 managers doing the Premier League. He said, and I think he's right, there's going to be a point here where you damage your product because the idea of what we're doing now and the reason we've got this league back is so we can watch the best footballers in the world play football. By the end of December, and I think he's right, we're picking up an injury a game. It seems that every team is picking up an injury a game.
Yeah.
By the time December rolls around, you're not going to be able to watch the best footballers in the league play football.
Just on this really quickly, when I talk about him looking ahead, I think one of the things he can't say, not least because he doesn't want to put it in the mind of his footballers, but one of the things I think is that currently I would be genuinely surprised if an English side makes the last four of the Champions League. Mm. Because the toll and the way this league operates and the fact that it is intensely physical, that's not to say that other leagues aren't as competitive, but that it is intensely physical the way in which football's played in this country and the toll of it all, the fact that we haven't got the five subs, the way in which it's all rolled all the way through. The manager can't say that, but I think part of what all this is he would like it to be easier in January, February and March. Can you make it easier in January, February, March and April for me? Is I think the message here, because he knows he's not going to get his win in December, but I think he's saying you need to start changing shit by January, February, March.
The thing is, I think this is his frustration, is he looks at the Spanish league, who move heaven and earth in terms of their fixture schedule, despite having television contracts, although they're slightly different abroad, they move heaven and earth to make sure that their product, as in Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Juventus, Paris Saint-Germain, whoever, are representing their product on the global stage in the latter stages of the Champions League, because you can only be the best league in the world if your best teams in the world, i.e. Liverpool and Manchester City, are competing for that top prize. Yeah. And if Liverpool aren't in, and Liverpool and Manchester City aren't in with the sniff of winning it, well, what's the point? Yeah. Help them out.
Pick me a team for Atalanta then, Rob. Or I'll pick you a team for Atalanta and you can tell me where you disagree with me. Alisson Becker in goal.
Okay.
Way. Nico Williams right back.
100%.
Then it will be Rhys Williams next to him if he is fit enough.
Yeah, 100% if he's fit
enough. Fabinho?
Yes.
Tsimikas?
Yes. Ooh. 100% agree. I've got it written down here.
Oh, so have you? Go on then. You go with Cut Loose. Sorry, I was trying to help you out.
But it's
no, 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 no. here you go. It gets... Well, we need to know who's fit. James Pearce has said this morning that the likes of Henderson and Thiago are making progress. Okay. So, but I'm not counting. I picked exactly that same defence. I think, assuming you haven't got Henderson and Thiago, this is where it gets interesting. I think you're going to have to. Wijnaldum has to be rested. You cannot risk an injury to him given what's going on. And I'd play James Milner at the base of my midfield reluctantly. But James hasn't played much football. He didn't play in the international break. Even that, given his age, I think you can ask him to go again. And there's also an outside chance Trent is ready for the weekend. So I'm going...
Is there? Wow.
Yes, yeah, there is. So I'm going Milner and Jones in midfield. The third midfield slot is going to... is kept me up last night after the thing. I put if Thiago's fit, Thiago or Henderson, but I don't think he's good. I've actually looked at the numbers. There's no one. It's Clarkson who was on the bench yesterday, not Jeremy, the new lad. I don't even know his first name. Leighton Clarkson, because he's a midfielder who can play 6, 8 or 10. Up front, you're lucky that you've got Salah back and available. That's the slightly surreal better bit of it. Salah, Origi and Minamino pick themselves as a front three, and you can figure out afterwards how they work. That third... He could, and I'm probably wrong, he's not going to gamble with Clarkson against Atalanta. I would, because I don't want to risk any injuries. He may ask Ginny to give him 60.
That's such a shame you can't just play him on the twice.
I think he's full strength to get it out of the way, blah, blah, blah.
If we just walk,
have you looked at how the points
you never
work?
Have to worry
Did
about
you hear what he said about Brighton?
What?
He said, I might just send them the points.
Yes.
That was an interesting saying. That told me that the way Klopp buys... two free games, as if he wins that game he wins the group.
Yeah. No, he doesn't.
Well, he will win.
You need two. The winning that you
that puts on 12 points,
you won't win the group because it's stopping Ajax beating us that wins us the group. Two draws wins us the group. A draw is as good as a win. That's why I think he can afford to take some chances.
Does he not do what you've both said? So does he not split the difference between Rob and Paul, and that he starts Paulish and then makes five subs to end
that's
rubbish?
That's the difference.
Yeah. Or he puts Mane on the bench and Wijnaldum on the bench. One of the two.
I think he'll be rubbing his hands with the five subs.
I reckon Wijnaldum, for instance, what you said about Henderson and Thiago, it wouldn't surprise me if Thiago's ready for a game, that it might be 45 minutes Wijnaldum, 45 minutes Thiago, off the basis of I'm giving Wijnaldum his rest, but Thiago could just do with running around playing for Liverpool for a bit.
Yeah.
Well, I think there'll be two half-time changes, which happen no matter whether it's 3-0 Atalanta or 3-0 Liverpool, I would imagine. I think he wants this game out the way. And okay, the other thing is, I don't think it really matters whether you win the group as much anymore in the Champions League now with the way the new seasons are.
A draw qualifies us.
But I don't think he would want to take any risks. I mean, I know we absolutely smashed them last time, but they're no mugs.
They're a good side, and they'll be determined to put that right.
I think it's just one where he goes, okay, once that's to bed, I think he can put a weaker team out against Brighton and win than Atalanta. I think that's the roundabout point.
I also think he can gamble on, I take your point about winning the group, like if he wins this one, he doesn't win the group, but I think he can gamble on Ajax not getting maximum points from Liverpool and whatever Liverpool side we put out and Atalanta.
You can gamble on that,
And I think he will gamble, but I think he may well therefore be happy to do what sort of Paul suggested, possibly...
I think you found
the third way.
Have I found the third way? Have I triangulated?
You've given it. I think, you're right, that it starts as one and ends as the other because it's the only fair way, or actually the only possible way to do it.
Okay, I found that. I've triangulated that. Well done, everybody. Thank you very much indeed to Amelia Bonner, to Rob Gutman, to Paul Senior, and to Liverpool Football Club for being fucking brilliant. Sports Social Podcast Network.